Climate change affecting how people live, also where they live, and now whether or not they can get a mortgage. The 30-year mortgage might become a casualty of global warming. And that's because rising sea levels, worsening drought, and wildfires make the future of many homes uncertain. Here to tell us what this means for the U.S. economy is Jesse Keenan. He teaches at Harvard's Graduate School of Design, and he teaches a course on climate change resilience and adaptation. Welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. All right, so what is the problem here? Banks are just no longer going to issue 30-year mortgages in places that could be affected by rising sea levels and other effects of climate change?
So what we see now is emerging evidence by between buyers and sellers of housing that suggests that there's discounting behavior. That is, they're accepting more and they're paying less for housing. We think that behavior is starting to translate in the mortgage market. And so in very high risk areas associated with sea level rise, flooding, forest fires and the like, we anticipate that mortgagees, banks, are going to start pulling back on the availability of capital in mortgage markets.
But they haven't done it yet.
It's hard to know. We think that there's certainly behavior where they are passing on risk to the secondary markets like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, essentially the U.S. government. But we haven't seen what you would call a risk premium necessarily in the mortgage markets. But we think we will be there in a number of years.
Well, what you're describing, though, describes a large portion of the United States. Places that are prone to sea level rise, to flooding, to fires. It certainly describes a large portion of coastal California.
Coastal California is a little bit different because of the variations in elevation. But just to give you an example, with sea level rise inundation zones in the United States, that's about going up to about 6 feet towards the end of the century, which is in line with various government models and estimates, that would account between about 8% and 10% of annual mortgage issuance in the United States. So that's a big number in terms of the total amount of money being invested in these communities.
Does it mean they're not going to offer the 30-year mortgage, but they might offer the 15-year or something less, or they're not going to offer mortgages at all?
I think it's really going to vary by the market, by the adaptation or resilience interventions that are helping manage some of the risk in particularly high income or high value communities. But I think it's going to run a spectrum of increased interest rates, shorter term mortgages. And in some communities, in some submarkets, I think we're going to see very limited availability of mortgages.
But you're saying that in places where the housing stock is more expensive or they're richer homeowners, they might be immune to this because they can always pay?
Well, it's not that they're immune. It's that local communities, let's say at a county level or public municipalities, may be willing to put in the investments to help manage and mitigate some of this risk so they can protect their tax base. And that also not only protects homeowners, but it protects the banks as well.
Well, so I guess what you're painting is a possible picture of homeowners who are stuck in places that are terribly affected by climate change, maybe with flooding, who won't be able to sell their homes if they want to get out.
Yeah, I think they're stuck in different ways. You know, part of it may be a rapid devaluation or some devaluation in their home, but it may also impact in slightly more subtle ways. If you think about the amount of the older people in America who use reverse mortgages to tap into equity or to use a second mortgage as a means to help pay for their child to go to school. You know, when we talk about devaluation in housing, it has a broader impact on our ability to utilize that equity, and that will further the necessity to think about managed retreat.
Wow. So is there anything being done to mitigate this, to prevent this from happening?
Well, I think we're very early stages of understanding the geophysical risk. As that technology is moving forward, and it's moving very quickly, markets will utilize that information to begin parceling through the risk and the uncertainty. Within the next 5 years, we're going to have greater resolution about how markets are going to be responding to this. Because remember, very often these mortgages are issued for 30 years out. And I think 30 years seems like a long time, but certainly that's well within a very high probability of outcome associated with a lot of climate models. And so we have a pretty good sense of those houses that will very likely be underwater at the end of their mortgage term.
How many houses are you talking about that'll be underwater, do you think? And by underwater, We're not talking like physically underwater. We're talking about underwater in a mortgage sense.
Yes, yes. So there's been great work done by the Union of Concerned Scientists that have looked at the total amount of properties that are potentially at risk that are borrowing money today for a 30-year mortgage term. And it's in the order of, you know, hundreds of thousands of properties. This will impact, it's pretty crazy that we are so slow in thinking and internalizing these processes. But with technology and better measurement science, we're getting there.
So hundreds of thousands of homes you're anticipating in by the end of their 30-year mortgage, if they're written today, could be underwater financially.
Well, yes, financially and physically.
But do you anticipate a similar figure or a similar problem that homes that are in areas that are have a high probability of burning are going to see their value decrease substantially, and that perhaps by the end of 30 years they'll be underwater?
Yeah, this is what we see and would anticipate. This isn't just with advances in fire science of understanding the underlying risk associated with particular properties. This also applies to the availability of potable water when wells run dry, which requires homes to be, you can't lawfully live in a home if you don't have water, for instance. It relates to subsidence or unstable soils from landslides in the Mountain West. There's any number of physical impacts from climate change that represent real collateral risks to people's homes. And over time, as we have, again, better science, we'll get a better understanding of what that means in terms of risk.
So I guess it's the market doing what the government and what we are not doing, which is to say you can't live in this place, it's too risky.
Yeah, and I think that this represents a real challenge because there is no doubt that people will be trapped in their homes. They will be unable to necessarily sell. It's a game of musical chairs, and the question is, who are the last people standing? And I think this reinforces a movement we see now across the United States, as represented by recent legislation in Texas about consumer disclosure and the necessity to have transparency when you're buying and selling homes to put people on notice that, hey, this place flooded or this place caught on fire one time. So disclosure is, I think, critical to help mitigate some of the unintended consequences of this market behavior.
Jesse Keenan teaches at Harvard's Graduate School of Design, and he teaches a climate change and resilience and adaptation course there. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up, eating meat is a significant cause of CO2 emissions. Well, now some companies are addressing that by creating a meatless meat made out of thin air. That's next on Press Play.